This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is KJ Live.
Yeah!
With Chris Johnson. And Chris is having conversations with influencers in the sports world and entertainment industry.
Hey, hey.
Now here's Chris Johnson.
You are now tuned in to KJ Live. Today's guest on the show is a former college basketball star and pro that has returned to his alma mater, Boise State, as an assistant coach, where he's also a Hall of Famer. Please join me in welcoming Coach Roberto Bergeson to KJ Live. Berto, what's good?
What's happening, man? I appreciate you having me on.
Man, anything and everything. Life is good, brother. Hey, congratulations, man. Boise State, you return to your alma mater where you laid some of that laid the foundation for that program. In my opinion, turning it out in 98, 99, that was my senior year. Remember you on ESPN all day long. Talk about what it's like to go back, man, to Boise State, your alma mater, and get with Coach Leon Rice.
Man, it was, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like a dream come true that you never, you know, thought about it, you know, being a dream for so many years. I was doing the AAU stuff and I loved it. Like, I loved it. I loved everything about, you know, just kind of trying to help to, you know, build a culture of basketball here in this community that really wasn't one when we, you know, when I was here, you know, going to college, you know, the high school scene and all that. It was great. I enjoyed all of that. And I really, every time anybody would ask me, getting into college coaching, it was like, nah, just, you know, that's just not me, not for me. Coach Rice and I, you know, we his kids played in my program, so I knew him. Mm. You know, from day one, he stepped on into the town of Boise. Like, he hit me like day one and was like, look, we want you to be a part of the program. You know, culture is big for me, you know, the Gonzaga way, right? You know, the way of you know, we always embraced, you know, our alumni, and they always embraced us. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that you guys come around. And I think after I left, there was a little bit of separation where that wasn't a big deal. Like, our alumni, we just wasn't a lot of guys around, or it just wasn't embraced like we thought. And, you know, he did that. Like I said, for me, I wasn't even thinking about it. And then, you know, last year I had an opportunity to go to Eastern Washington. I had sent a couple of players to Eastern Washington. They had a new coaching change, and the associate that took over as the head job, he asked me if I wanted to come, and kind of looked at my wife. My wife looked at me like, we wasn't going nowhere, man. I'm in the house I wanted to retire in, and the kids are almost gone. We're about to be empty nesters. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, it felt right. It was a deal where it was like, man, this is a great opportunity to go there. Like I said, I got to coach my kids. I got to coach my oldest son in his senior year.
Was that the big reason why? I mean, because you had sound like you were straight, bro. You sound like Berto. You were straight. You were chilling. The AAU thing was locked. Now you're going right into the pressure of college basketball, and your son's going to be a senior. Man, I coached my son 3 years at Palisades. Just tell me about that process. What you wanted to be there for him. Talk to me.
Nah, it didn't even. It wasn't like he wasn't even in the picture.
Okay.
When I first was getting the opportunity to go to Eastern Washington.
Oh.
Now, there was one of my – so a kid by the name of Ellis Magnuson, he had started at Eastern at the point for 2 years. He's like one of my sons. Like, him and my middle son are like best friends. I've been coaching him since he was like six. Okay. So he was there. So there was an appeal for that. Right. I was like, dang, I get to go coach Ellis again. Yeah. And then – it almost was like the AAU stuff. We were already starting to like re-image what we were doing.
Okay.
And I felt like, not that we ran our course, but I felt like we did what we wanted to accomplish. I felt like we actually came in and we helped to, you know, really just propel the culture of basketball. And we got a lot of kids to get opportunities. And at that point, the basketball culture here now in Boise has grown. Like, it's grown a lot. And it was almost just like at that time when it came up, I kind of told my wife, like, this opportunity is coming up for a reason. We've done, you know, a lot of things already.
Mm-hmm.
I just think this is just a different challenge, and it's something that is right time. And at the time, I was thinking to myself, man, I'm 46 years old, like getting into college basketball now. If I'm ever gonna try it and give it a shot, yeah, I got to do it now. It's not gonna come around again. It's probably not gonna happen. And I'm definitely not going to, you know, not looking to start at the bottom or anything like that. Now, this opportunity was really good because I was the first assistant that he hired, so I got to. I didn't have to, you know, I got to be in an assistant. So it was just one of those situations where, like, man, this is just something we can't turn down. We got to at least give it a shot. Have no regrets. If it works out, great. If it don't work out, we can go back to what we was doing and say, hey, man, we did it. And so after I got on and took the job,
yeah,
that's when my son's situation as a grad transfer is like, well, shoot, can I come there too? I'm like, man, I think he would, because they lost a bunch of players. He didn't know what the roster was gonna be.
You needed some guys, right? Some players.
Yes. So I ended up able to, you know, he came out there, and then there was another kid I coached in prep school that came. And so then that ended up just being an incredible, incredible year for me, man. I was coaching like three of my kids, like them three is like my own kids.
Yeah.
It's a whole different situation, you know, even though, you know, I love all the kids the same, but it's just a little bit different when you're in it with guys that you came up with.
Yeah. So. Were you primarily on development side of things? Were you out recruiting? Like, what was your role at Eastern? Like, what skill, college basketball coaching skills did you pick up out there?
Well, you know, at Eastern, I mean, you know, especially being there, you know, it's not, I got the resources of a UCLA or a UW or even a Boise State. So you got to do everything, man. Yeah. We was doing everything. We was sharing a load, player development, recruiting, offense, defense, admin stuff, you know, op stuff.
Yep.
It's a place where it's like, if you want to get something done, you might have to just do it yourself. You know,
absolutely.
And, so man, out there I did, I learned a lot. I picked up a lot of different stuff. And I think the biggest thing I picked up was just even more so the interaction and the protocol between the program, the basketball team, and the athlete, and the administration.
Okay.
But then also the basketball team administration and the other side of campus, the teachers and the academic side of stuff, and how that intertwines, and how you have to make sure that you are intertwining that to make sure that you can give your student athletes, your players, the best experience possible. Yeah. And so for me, I think that's what I picked up the most, was just learning, you know, how that interaction works.
And now when you joined the Boise State staff, did you come back with like a mindset of like, I want to be out in the field trying to get players? Or did you want to be like, I want to be in the gym, you know, really working on guys, and I got some stuff really to teach? And which side of things, or did you want to encompass everything? I'm just curious to how your approach to your new gig was.
Yeah, I think where you say like encompass everything is one thing. I think for me, I think the way I process stuff and look at stuff with anything I do is I try to figure out where I fit and how I can make things better. Like, you know, everybody got their own way and they do things and people have success or not success. But I'll never, you know, look at a situation like, you know, what can I do or change this or do something different? It's like, okay, this is how you do something. That's the way you do it. That's the way you're successful. How can I, you know, fall in line with that, but how can I make it better? How can I make it more efficient? How can I improve those things? And so for me, it is a full, you know, like I said, a full encompassing thing. Like, I want to be able to do everything, but my passion does lie in the development. My passion, it lies in total development. I just love spending time, not just with young people, but specifically young people, because I think I have a lot to give them, because I think I was in their shoes and experienced a lot, especially at a young age. Correct. I experienced a lot, but just I think I've learned, you know, throughout my life to how to find peace and, you know, how to live healthy. So I want to be able to give that to them. But that's where for me, it's like, let me just get a couple of guys, and let's just spend some time on the floor. You know, let's spend some time in the film room. Let's spend some time at lunch. Let's spend some time, you know, hanging out. That's where, you know, I thrive, just with people. So obviously, then that ties into the recruiting too. You enjoy getting to meet people and talk to people and figure that out. Mainly, my main deal here is I'm the player development. I coordinated player development, which again, I embrace. I love doing it. And that's what I'm doing mainly. But yeah, we're still doing the same thing here, man. A lot of recruiting, a lot of offense and defense.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Y'all a high level program now. It used to be, I mean, the expectations now, I think, are a lot greater, especially with the tournament appearances and all the success that and pros. There's been a couple of guys that came out of there. I know my guy Clint Parks was training one of the kids that came out of Boise for a little bit. My son Will had a teammate that played at Oregon, Abu.
Yeah.
So he was over there. Yep. It reminded me hearing you talk, Berto, about your approach to the gig, to the job. It reminded me of my experience at UCLA with Lorenzo Romar. Romar was about 47, 48, could still give you buckets and ones.
Yeah.
still young enough to relate, but still old enough to where you had to respect him as the big OG, big brother type of guy. And his role, man, at UCLA was so valuable for us, because as you just talked about, it's not just about on the court and this and that. It's about a full 360 mentoring. Mm-hmm. As much time as you can spend with these young folks, these student athletes in your program, showing them the right way, keeping their head on straight, you have no idea how much that means to them, to keeping them on the straight and narrow. You feel me? Yeah. Because I know Ro was like that. Romar was like that with us. So he's eating lunch. He's eating lunch with us. He's breaking down our film. Our film sessions are ridiculous because we are just laughing. Like, you know, because when you watch yourself on film, Berto, you know, it's jokes coming. It's like, bro, what are you doing right here?
You can't hide from it. No. You can't hide from the film. And you, like you said, you know, when you in there and you in with people that you can relate to, that relate to you. It's enjoyable, like you said, and you know you're going to crack on each other and you're going to talk about each other and get it. So I know, man, Coach Romar is one of my favorites ever, man, ever since I was young, just you know, getting to know him and being around him. He got a great staff at Pepperdine, too, that, like, I always tell people, man, if it wasn't here, that's, like, the best staff. I think, I'd love to be around them dudes. They good, but Romar is good. And he's the type of dude that, for me, I know, you know, was the kind of guy that I looked to and was like, man, that's a coach I want to be around. And I know I had guys like that in my life, my high school coach and, you know, one of my sisters in college. And even, you know, even when I was in the pros, a couple of NBA guys that just affected me, like you said, in that way, helped me along the line. Cause I was on the road to destruction. And if it wasn't for some of the people pulling me up, I wouldn't have been there and I wouldn't have been able to understand how to, you know, find that peace or live healthy. So
yeah, all facts, man.
We gotta share it.
Yeah, no, share it so that somebody, you never know what somebody's going to get from, you know what I mean? And so that's the whole thing, man. When you look back, though, in your beginnings, you were born in what, the Federal Way, Washington area, or Decatur, or what part of Washington were you born in? Where are you from? Talk to me.
So, I mean, I was actually born in Seattle. I was born at University of Washington Hospital. But then I was raised in Tacoma.
Tacoma.
Yeah. So I was raised in Tacoma. I live with my grandparents raised me. And then I ended up moving from Tacoma my freshman year. I moved out to Federal Way and went to Decatur, which is, I mean, it's basically connected to Tacoma, man. I mean, like, from my grandparents' house to where we moved was like 15 minutes. But at that time, Federal Way was more of a suburb. I mean, it was a suburb of Tacoma.
Yeah.
You know, Tacoma was a little bit more like, you know, it was a little wild. It was a little more, you know, I don't know, little, like I said, a little bit more city, like city-ish, and Federal Way was a little bit more suburb.
Yeah.
So then I went out there and that's where, you know, I met Mike D. We met our sophomore year. We were both going to Decatur together. And then it was crazy, man.
you and Mike Dickerson.
It was crazy.
On the same squad. But what was it like? What was y'all squad like that one year? Who else was on that squad that I might know?
So we had another kid that played with us named Jovan Hollins.
Okay.
He played at the University of Air Force.
Okay.
We were all sophomores. We were all the same class. And then the guys ahead of us, we had a couple of seniors that didn't really, they really didn't hoop. One of them played baseball. I mean, they were hoopers there.
Yeah.
So we did well. Yeah. We were going to be loaded. But then my sophomore year, Mike D ended up transferring it. And he went to the Crosstown Rival School. Ooh. His dad didn't really like our coaches' discipline.
Yeah. So then
he went to the Crosstown Rival, and it was games was rivalry, but like me and Mike D, like we had created such a bond. We was, you know, we used to have to hide. Like we, you know, I get done with practice, he get done with practice. He come pick me up. We go to Pac West and play, or we go to the Bellevue Pro Club to play with the Sonics. My coach didn't know, but you know, he would have been mad if he knew that. But So I went there. So I was in Decatur. I Decatur for my sophomore through senior year, and then from there ended up going to Watt UW.
And what AAU program did you play for? Because I think we played. Didn't we play you in Long Beach?
Yeah. So here's what's crazy is we didn't have no AAU programs then.
Okay.
It was just straight Washington BCI. And that's part of the reason why our team was, like you said, when we was back, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was just like they literally would pick the 10 best kids from the whole state. Now, mostly just from Western Washington. Eastern Washington had kind of like their own little team that they would have. So, like, I remember, what's my boy name that moved out there? He moved from California that played for – he played in the NBA a couple of years, played at Kansas, big fellas, seven-footer. Kind of awkward, big dude. What was his name? Pollard.
Oh, Scott Pollard.
Yeah, Scott Pollard played on the east side. He was out there a little bit. But Mike D, Oma Givens,
jeez,
JT, Donald Watt.
Jeez.
You know, I mean, we had some other dudes, you know, that was getting it in.
Yeah.
Javon Green, all of them dudes, we played together.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think about, I know we played you guys one time. I think you, Jelani, Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, Slamming. Yeah, that, there was a that squad.
Yeah,
I remember that.
We played y'all. Who else is on there? I'm pretty sure Miles played on there.
Miles, J.R. Henderson, Doug Gottlieb.
J.R.
Yeah, it was a bunch
but
of
But see, them. Here's what's crazy, though. When we played y'all, Doug wasn't on that team.
Okay.
Now, here's what's crazy. So we all played together in the summer, but one spring, it was either the fall or the spring, after we had played against you guys or something, I don't know if it was Doug or if it was Miles, but somebody connected. How did this happen? No, I know what happened. We were playing on our Washington BCI team. We went out there and stayed. When we played in the tournament, the modern day team hosted us.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
They let our team stay with one of their players.
Yeah.
I ended up staying with the kid named Darren Height.
Yeah, I know Darren. He played on my squad. Yeah, he went to Princeton. Darren went
exactly.
to Princeton.
So Darren went to Princeton. So I stayed with Darren, and we hit it off. It was good. The parents good. So then the fall came. Darren called me. He was like, hey, we need somebody for our team. Doug's dad was coaching the Orange Crush.
That was my – I played for Doug's dad. Yep.
But you didn't play that. You
didn't play that. I wasn't there.
And that's probably what happened. You got a bunch of you guys didn't play.
Yeah.
So they needed some guys.
Yeah.
I went down there. It was me, Trajan Langdon, Chauncey.
No.
Doug didn't play for some reason. He was gone. Darren Height, the 6'7" athletic white kid that went to San Luis Obispo. I don't remember his name.
Okay.
Him. Who else played with us? Miles.
Damn.
I think a Luge.
It might have been Luge. Luge, he was young.
Yeah, I don't think he played, but I think he practiced with us at modern day.
Yeah.
And he was nice. I don't care how young he was. He was so good.
Yes, sir.
And then we had, I think Oma played with us.
Dang.
Oma played with us. And we played that. And I played that fall and actually had, and that was kind of one of the ones that put me on the map. It was good. But that was. Like, yeah, that was – and I remember going down there, like, man, it's the same dudes that – but, they obviously played against you guys in Pump and Run and all that stuff.
That is so dope, man. But playing for – just to talk about Bob Gottlieb for a second. I had played for Bob Gottlieb, who coached the team that you had played on, Doug's dad, for since about the seventh grade. But he was he was like the first – you know, Bob was an experienced college coach and had been assistants everywhere. So he had sets and you was running all – hey, yo, the sideline after out of bounds, the after timeouts. I mean, we coming out with plays, bro.
Yes.
That was a great, great memory. But the thing I remember about – I think we played you guys Washington BCI, man. I remember y'all had this like buff, this like monster light skinned dude. He had a curly tie. Who was that? Was it a dude?
Listen, Tony Norman.
Yes, dude.
And he almost got into a fight with one of y'all assistant coaches.
Bruh, that's what I'm talking about, bro.
So look, this is what's crazy. Like that's my brother. Like, so he and I met in Tacoma. Downtown Y playing at late night. We used to have late night at the Downtown Y in Tacoma.
Yeah.
You know, during the summers that you could do, you go, it'd be during the week, but during the school year, it was just Fridays and Saturdays. I met him. His mom was in the military, met him. We kicked it off. he was going to a school in Tacoma. So then I met him my sophomore year, end of my sophomore year. So going into my junior year, I was like, man, he wasn't playing. He went to the same school. Remember Casey Calvary?
Yeah. Gonzaga.
Casey Calvary. He went to the same school as Casey Calvary. Yeah. And they had some other dudes down there, but Tony wasn't getting no run. I'm like, come to school with us. So look, if Mike D wouldn't have transferred, it would have been me, Mike D, and him.
He was a beast.
And my boy Jovan Hollins. And do you remember Quincy Wilder?
Yeah, I do.
So Quincy Wilder, that's my cousin. So he's 2 years younger than us.
Okay.
My young cousin. Man, look, we was already low. If we'd have had that, it would have been a wrap. So T Norman, that's my hey man, that dude was so crazy. I used to call him Crazy Norman.
Oh, he wasn't playing, man. I called myself, you know, trying to be tough back then. You know, I had just gotten into it, I think, with Mad Dog Madison. I just punked Madison. So we played y'all next. And I'm going at him, but he had that look in his eyes where he wasn't backing down. Like, you know when somebody. Hey, Birdo, you know when somebody's like, oh, this dude, no, I can't test him. Hold on. But I remember Lute Olson being at the game, man. It was a hell of a game, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
But bro, tell me this. When you look at, you know, state of Washington and the hoop culture out there, you were part of a wave, man, of a generation that really put it down and laid the foundation for some stuff that's been going on since then. I mean, there's been tons of guys that have come out that area. What is it about that state, man, the basketball culture that produces so many skilled, athletic, high IQ having basketball players?
Man, I think to start off with, I know, like, when I was coming up living in Tacoma, there wasn't nobody from Tacoma that really actually made it to, like, you know, high D1 level. Like, there were some guys, like, back in the day that got, you know, lucky and was there or whatever.
Yeah.
But nobody, you know, everybody that was nice, like, they was caught up, man. They was either – they didn't happen. But they was at the park. I mean, they was at the park. You could go down there and see – all these dudes, the Jason Swans of the worlds and Donnell Morgans, and these dudes was like killers.
Mm-hmm.
Some reason or another, you know, just didn't happen. But Seattle did. Like, Seattle has some guys.
Yeah.
Christie was a guy that I watched growing up, was like, oh my goodness. Tony Harris was a killer.
Washington State.
Yes. Ooh. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So there was some dudes like that. You know, I mean, shoot, Mark Pope, you know, he played he was from Seattle. He played there. I mean, but even before then, there were some dudes that was hoopers that, you know, but I think it just, you never really, Seattle never really got they just do.
No, they didn't.
But I think, you know, there was like a little bit of a gap, and especially down south where I'm from, you know, Tacoma is south of Seattle.
Yeah.
There just wasn't a lot of dudes. And so I think our year, like you said, our year was really – before us, you know, like KJ Roberts, Donnie Marshall, them dudes that made it at a high level. Mm-hmm. But there was a gap where most of the dudes coming from the state of Washington there, they wasn't getting there. So our year, like you said, with Oma being a top five player in the nation, you know, coming out of high school, and Mike D killing it, and I did well, and Javon Green, and then obviously Donald and JT was a year younger than us, but they was on the map already because they was young dudes. It was a little bit of like, okay, now they got something, like it's some stuff up there. And I think what happened was a couple of things. One, guys like Jamal, JT, D Watts, they just came back and embraced the city, and they just would come back and like Isaiah Thomas, he does it too. Like, it wasn't, when I was coming up, it was a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say elitist, but a little bit more secluded. Facts. Like, if you wanted to hoop with the best, you had to go to this private little pro club where the pros was at, and got that's where and they wasn't letting, you know, a whole lot of other riffraffs in.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, like I said, you got to play your way up. I understand that.
Yeah.
But like Jamal and JT and IT and them, they started a whole new renaissance. Doug helped with this too. I remember, you know, Jamal being a young dude and Doug having this community center and have let's go hoop. And he, anybody that, you know, you want to come hoop, young, old, or whatever, they started this, just this little culture to where it's like everybody was accepted, no matter if he was young, old, or whatever.
Oh, that's real.
Dude would be like, hey, where the hoop at? We coming to hoop. And, you know, like Jamal, that dude is just a hooper, man. He don't care nothing about working out. He just want to hoop anyway. So I think, one, it was just this culture where, you know, the young kids and anybody would just see them dudes. They would see them. If you can see people and you can see who they are and you can touch them and feel them, it does something to inspire you, bro. So them little dudes, so, you know, whoever it was, the McDaniel twins or DeJounte, or you remember Lodrick and Roderick Stewart, them
facts,
two, them guys, they were seeing and feeling and touching Doug and Jamal and all of these dudes. And then I think they just started hooping. But I think the other thing was that helped was before we really started getting off and hoop, and before it was, basketball in Washington was really known for guys like, you know, the old school dudes. You know, you got to be, you know, run this and run that and be sharp and be disciplined and drill. And I think those two worlds met up. When those two worlds met up, now you got these kids that can just hoop because they out there. But they also started learning from some of these coaches how to play. It wasn't just one or the other. Yeah. And I think when them worlds met, now you started building it up and building some guys. And now the culture there is just hot, man. Like it's just, it's kids hooping everywhere. And again, it's just a healthy culture. If you go back and like, I know like this summer, there was some stuff going on where people was mad. Like, you know, they was, you know, Baby Boy and Paula was getting into it, man. That was just hoop stuff, man. It wasn't like, it's a really healthy culture there.
Yeah.
Up, especially because them dudes, I give Jamal and Doug and IT, I give them dudes like a lot of credit, man. They embrace the culture and they keeping it there and they helping it out, man. They helping out for sure.
No, it's been amazing, man, just to watch it. And just, I remember even with Romar and UW, how, what he had going over there when they were hopping, okay? And it was just a brand. It was like a unique brand of guy that came out of there. Like I say, skilled, high IQ, you know, just like coming through, like, dang, who is
great
this?
Feel.
Great feel. Yeah. Shares it, you know, just plays the game the right way. So I always had a ton of respect for guys like that. So for you, though, when you finished your high school career, you obviously probably had a bunch of people beating down your door. Who were some of the schools that were recruiting you, and why did you ultimately start off at UW?
So, I mean, I was a little bit late on the scene. I honestly, like, it was, you know, I wasn't being recruited as high as Mike D and Omen, those guys. I mean, there was people sending me letters, but we know how it is then.
Sure.
It wasn't like crazy. But 100%, I know, you know, the summer before my senior year, we played against, your boy Antoine Walker. We played against him. And I had a good game and played against Randy Livingston. The team had a good game. Yes. I know that's what put me on the map.
Yeah.
But even my senior year was kind of like hit and miss. But that fall, after the summer, that fall, I came out and played with the Orange Crush with Darren and them. And I played with, like I said, you know, them guys was all on the team. I had a really good event down there at Dominguez Hills.
Mm-hmm.
People like really started to take notice. So, you know, it was like, my last, the schools that I was really, really into, I took a visit to Boston College, took a visit to Santa Clara. Utah was recruiting me. UW was recruiting me, but they really wanted Mike D. And we was the same position. They really wanted Mike D. So the crazy thing is Arizona and Washington both was recruiting both of us. Yeah. But Mike was high on the list. I was probably down here, right?
Yeah.
So as soon as – so here's – I went to Santa Clara. Steve Nash was my host. I had a phenomenal time.
Hey, Marlon, Steve Nash was up there. Was Dick Davey the coach?
Dick Davey.
I'm rolling coach. With Dick Davey, dog.
I was rolling with Dick Davey, too. And if I was smart, that's where I should have went. I had a great time. It was a great experience.
Yeah.
It would have been set off. But I was young. I was young. I was 18. I was caught up in it. went to Boston College. It was a whole different universe, different world. It was weird, man.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
But just because it was the Big East and it was Boston College, I was like, here's where I'm going. And this is what's crazy about this deal. I committed to Boston College.
Dang.
Signed my letter of intent. I mailed my letter of intent back. The same day I mailed it back, I get a call from the assistant coach telling me, Roberto, I'm sorry, we wanted you. We're going to have to renege because we just got a commitment from a kid that we didn't think we were going to get.
Who was it?
I'm about to tell you. He's the number one player in the state, top 10 player in the country. We thought he was going to go to Duke or something. I can't remember. Chris Herron.
Wow.
So what's crazy is fast forward, you know, 5 years or whatever it was, me and Chris was on the same team at the NBA draft combine. We connected, hooked up. He was like, look, I got to be a point guard. I'm going to get you the rock. Make sure you make shots. Oh, yeah, that's great. I'm going to get you the ball. And I told him that story. And I said, Chris, you know you stole my scholarship, right?
That's a sick story. Wow.
Yeah. So anyways, long story short, Mike D signs at Arizona. As soon as he signs at Arizona, Washington puts the full court press in. Oh, they didn't get Mike, so now they want to press me.
Yeah.
And I was caught up. It was hometown, packed in.
Who was it, Giacoletti? Who was recruiting you?
Well, Coach Jack did, but it was mainly – well, here's who did it. So
– Turgeon? Was Turgeon up there?
No. Oh, so Coach McKay, Richie McKay.
Oh, Richie, yeah.
Yeah, so Richie – but here's who did the most recruiting. I'm going to tell you who did the most recruiting.
Who?
And I'm going to let you guess. Twins – they wasn't coaches.
Darren Kalish?
Nope. They were agents.
Oh, the Pumps, baby.
Nah, it wasn't the Pumps.
The good ones.
Yeah.
The good ones, baby.
So Eric Hughes was boys with the good ones. They was doing a lot of Gary Payton stuff, or Eric was doing Gary Payton stuff back then, the good ones.
Yep.
Man, them dudes came, picked me up, took me to their spot, looking over there. They did all the recruiting. I said, so the house was out the windows. I'm like,
It's over.
They set it off. But, you know, the crazy thing is, like, Lawyer Malloy was there. Yeah. I grew up with him. He's the same age as my sister. I knew him from my little. So on my visit, he snatched me up. I got you, little bro.
That's sick.
So I mean, my head was spinning. And it actually was the worst decision I ever made because I just wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready for the distractions, man. I was immature, man.
Was it a partying thing? Were you going out too much? Were you not focused on basketball?
It is exactly what it was. It wasn't, okay. And it wasn't just always partying. It was just like, yeah, man, like all of my family, like that's, you know, I grew up there. That's where my family and my people was at. So sometimes it was just, on the weekends, I would go back and I was just sitting on the block, like doing nothing because everybody wanted to celebrate me, right? They wanted to say, oh man, you know, this guy taking you around, do that. And I was kind of used to that. But yeah, it was some partying involved, but I wasn't doing the things that got me there. I wasn't doing my work, extra work. I was messing up in school. I wasn't going to class. Obviously being a freshman, it's a transition, but I was even going overboard just because, like I said, just being at home at that time, I was not ready. It was all me. I was not ready to handle those distractions to be able to say no. And again, you know, it could have worked out anyway. It ended up working out great because, you know, obviously my career went that way. But yeah, man, that's how it went down.
What made you make the move to Boise State? Or first it was Southern College of Southern Idaho for a year, right? And we'll talk about that because I've always been enamored with that program over there. I was just always curious, like what was College of Southern Idaho like?
Man, I'm gonna try to give you the condensed version because we don't got.
I know. Condense me.
So again, I was at UW, was messing up, you know, doing everything, and so I had a conversation, you know, with myself and with some of my family. Like, look, I got to get out of here. Like, I you know, and some of my family members, my coach and my son, like, man, you got to either figure this out or not. So I just kind of was like, you know what, the best thing for me right now is to get as far as away as I can. I got to get away from home and grow up. Utah was recruiting me at that time. They wanted me. Santa Clara still wanted me, but I didn't have the grades. I screwed up so bad my freshman year. I didn't have the grades. I had to go JUCO. So I went to Midland, Texas first.
That's big time too, though.
I went to Midland, Texas. I was in Midland for about 2 months during the summer. and, you know, had some crazy stuff down there. It was a little bit cold, but it was some crazy stuff down there. Again, I wasn't mature enough to handle it, but it was some crazy stuff going on down there, man. We had some run-ins with the police and stuff that I wasn't used to. Like, you know, I mean,
yes. Texas.
You know, we know how it is, man. Texas. It's still some racist stuff, but in the Northwest, it's kind of hidden.
Yeah.
Out there, it's right up in your face. Like,
in your face. Man, like,
mm-hmm. But, you know, I still, like I said, I wasn't mature enough to handle it. So I ended up, you know, me and the coach kind of had a little falling out. Okay, we out of here. So then I left and I went to CSI. One of my teammates, who's a year younger than me, his name is Andre Pleasant, who was another killer. He was a can't miss Division I dude. He just, again, just never did, really got the grades together. He was at CSI, told his coach I was doing nothing. The coach was like, man, get him out there. So I went to CSI. I was at CSI for a semester. Life circumstances, man. My mom relapsed. She, you know, on some drugs. She had some stuff. I had a this girl I was with. She was pregnant through high school. I'm going through this stuff. I can't handle it. Talking to my coaches, they gave me an ultimatum, either stay or go. I ended up leaving that semester. So when I left that semester, I mean, I went home, man. I was lost, man. I was about to be done. I had nothing. I had nothing. Good thing I had some good coaches. My high school coach at that time, he had got assistant job at Boise State at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He hits me and was like, look, man, I don't know what's going to happen with you. I don't know what's going to go on. You know, all the schools that was recruiting you at CSI, and it was some big schools, which probably was a good thing I didn't go. They got off of you. I was crazy. I don't blame them. I wouldn't assign me either, man. I was out there. He gave me some advice. He said, no matter what you do, I don't care what you do, can you just go make sure you finish your AA?
Mm.
Go to school, finish your AA. And if you do that, maybe something happens, maybe it doesn't, but at least you don't lose all the time. So good thing my grandmother and my girlfriend at the time, they helped me pay for school. I finished my AA. And once I finished my AA, I think my coach was testing me to see if I really was going to do it.
Yeah.
Called me and he was like, I didn't have no other. I had one other school. Illinois Chicago was the only other school calling me. They tracked me down from my grandma's house or something like that. But my coach was like, hey, I convinced my head coach to give you a shot. This is your last chance. You can come or you cannot, you know, do it. And that's how I ended up. And I'm thinking in my mind, I ain't going to Boise, Idaho. I'm not going out there, man. There ain't nothing out there. But that's the only thing I had. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Monster senior year at Boise State, where you averaged over 20 a game. You won a regular season, Big West championship. I remember seeing you on ESPN a bunch. And just being enamored, like, dang, this dude is 6'6 out here, just rack. He was dunking on dudes, Berto. I mean, you turned it out. I'll just be honest. And you were, but the handle, the push, I mean, just everything that you had, man, you were just so live. Like, trust me, we were out in LA, UCLA dudes, we're like, dang, Berto, we'd be in the building, we'd be watching your highlights of your games, like, Berto, we'd be going crazy on you. Oh, dude, we'd be going crazy on you. Have that senior year, man. You go to the draft, you're picked with the 57th pick. In the second round. Tell me, I asked all my guys that got drafted on here, I asked them this question. Were you satisfied? Were you happy about being drafted? Were you disappointed it wasn't higher? And how did it feel to just be drafted? Because some of us, like myself, did not hear his name called on that special night, bro. So I always want to hear from you. How did that feel, brother?
Before I answer that one, get back a little bit to at Boise State and y'all being at UCLA. And there was always, because again, we played against you guys when we was young and it was something for us. We looked at you guys from LA like, man, this is like, you guys was like our barometer. Like, it was like, we had to catch Jelani. We had to catch Ricky Price. We had to catch you. We had to catch Tony.
Yeah.
And so when y'all was at UCLA, it was the same thing. We used to always watch y'all and be like, man, there go Toby, got a nasty dunk again. Chris went 5 for 6 for 3. You know? So we was the same way. So my junior year, when we played you guys at Pauly, we was in there gas. We was ready, especially because like Kewan Woods was with us, and that was Baron Boy. They went to high school together.
Crossroads.
So Kewan had us geeked and amped, and we went in there, and we was at y'all, man. We was going, and then but here's the thing, this crazy thing you talk about, man. It was one play, and I wish I could forget it, but I can't because they got it on the internet and it blasts. Man, I was trying to go dunk on JR. think it was either JR or Jelani. I can't remember. I think it was JR. I was trying to go dunk on this dude baseline, and Baron comes from behind me and just,
yeah,
it just snatches it, right? So listen, I don't never want nobody to see that ever. My kids found on Twitter or something highlight reel of Baron, and it got
you was in it.
It's that one.
Oh,
and
that's
my kids
rough.
Put record screen recorded it. They always, and then all the kids that I coach, Berto, why did Baron do you like this? Bah, 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 bah. Hey, they kill me. They kill me.
Hey, the internet. You can't hide from the internet, Berto.
Hey, and I be telling them, I'm like, man, y'all see what Baron did to Andre Kirilenko? You see, he didn't do it to a lot of people, man. It happened. Yeah. I said, you play at that level, you're gonna get some, you're gonna get got some. So
heck yeah.
So man, respect to all y'all, man. We had the same. We used to just like every time y'all playing, man, it was love, man. It was respect.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Man, the draft deal. Yeah, the draft deal was incredible, man. Leading up to the draft, I was on the boards. I was mid to late first round, second round, whatever, you know, did all the stuff, did the Portsmouth, did the Chicago, did well in all of them, was getting some interviews with a couple of teams, was saying they really wanted me. When I was in Chicago, after the second day, I had two really good days. My agent's getting calls like, yes, 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 you're lining this up. After the second day, when we did our physicals, I did my physical and my EKG came up weird. I had a heart deal. They discovered I had an enlarged heart.
Ooh.
So it was a scary thing. I had to go get tested. And when that happened, it was like it was one of the most heart-wrenching days ever. Like, because they basically telling me at that time, people was like, they was afraid of that. Yes. They were like, you're never gonna be able to play.
Because Hank Gathers situation.
Yes. So
everybody was like scared for real. Yeah.
Yeah. So they shut me down. And then at that point, my agent was like, look, man, all this stuff's out the window. You just gotta go. So I had to go to a bunch of different places, man. I had to go to Mayo. I had to go to Swedish Heart Institute in Seattle. I had to have people clear me. Finally, after, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks of doing this testing, they cleared me. Like, they cleared me, said, you're good, jumped back on boards. And then at that time, I wasn't able to do a couple of workouts that had lined up. So my agent had to, like, squish the stuff in. I ended up doing 22 workouts. I ended up doing 22 individual workouts. At that time, they said that was the most individual workouts anybody had done after Mike D.
Wow.
Mike D did like 24, 25. Mike D always, for our whole life,
extra.
Just one-upping me every time. I'm like, man, bro, chill out, man. Can you just not have energy one time, bro? Like,
wow. So, 24 workouts, bro.
Man, I had one time I went to Houston, Phoenix, Vancouver, three back-to-back days and did workouts.
And did you have, like, who would you work out against? Would it be like a group of like other two? Hey, talk to me.
Hey, the best one ever was in Seattle with Ron Artest, with Meta.
Oh, it was with Meta?
Hey, this man was so wild, crazy, man. We had dinner with the owner and the GM. He throwing out questions to the owner about his private life and stuff, right? That's the first time I met this dude and said, oh, he different.
Oh, he different.
Like, he different. nah, man. The workouts was great, man. Like, shoot, man, I can't even remember all the Will Avery and a couple of them.
Yeah.
What's our boy that was the D2 dude? George, that was it with the Lakers for a while.
Oh, Devin George.
Devin worked out against each other in Houston.
Yeah.
Nice. Shoot, man. Gordon Giracek worked out against him in Phoenix. It was a lot of them dudes, man. It was a lot of them dudes. And it was some crazy stuff. The craziest thing happened when we was in Phoenix working out at the end of the workout. So first we had to play one-on-one against Frank Johnson. and his old butt out there just still shifty, giving people buckets, right? So we got to play one-on-one against him. After we get through chasing him around one-on-one, after we had already did our workout, Danny Ainge says, okay, y'all get on the line. We about to run. Okay, maybe doing a couple down and backs. Nah, you got to run for 3 straight minutes.
Yeah.
So it's down, back, just down and back, 3 straight minutes. We getting ready to run. He said, oh, one more thing. Here's somebody joining you. He put his 13-year-old son in there on the line with us.
Mm-hmm.
He put him on the line. We looking at him like, we going. Yeah. This man sprinting. Hey,
and he making y'all look bad. He making y'all look bad.
And you know, we in here like we ain't. Eventually, I can't remember exactly who was in there. A couple of the dudes, it was like 3 or 4 of us. They just was like, forget it, man. We can't keep up with this dude. Hey, I was like, I'm not letting this kid beat me. I'm dying running. Hey, he could run forever. He could have ran forever. I promise you. It was like, why you is just basically just trying to embarrass us, just putting us in there and try to embarrass us. So,
oh, that's funny, man. That's funny, man.
So anyways, all that stuff was good, man. It was all great. When it came down to it, after I did my workouts, you know, it was 2 teams. My agent basically was like, Vancouver and Salt Lake was the 2 teams that said they were going to take me in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver had the number 2 pick. They knew franchise didn't want them to draft him. They were trying to trade the pick. They said they were going to trade the pick for a lower pick in the middle of the end, get a veteran, and then they were going to take me. It didn't happen, obviously. They weren't able to trade it, and then they ended up taking – they had to take franchise.
Yeah.
And then I'll never forget the Jazz. They had like 20 or 21, and they basically – the whole draft day, they on the phone with me and my agent like, hey, we don't know what we're doing. We decide between 2 guys. It's Roberto or another guy, Roberto or another guy. And we like, you know, we kind of had a stalemate. And they ended up taking your boy from Minnesota, the shooter, dark-skinned kid.
Quincy?
Yes, Quincy Lewis. And Quincy Lewis is the guy they called. And it was like, man. And that when that happened, I was like, shoot.
Yeah,
I was almost thinking like at that time I was like, man, I might not like it might not happen. I might not get drafted. Like I'm at my grandparents' house where I grew up at 40th Pacific in Tacoma. House full, all the family there, all my friends, everybody there. We like, man, it's gonna happen. And then time starts to go on, and my agent hits me, and he's just like, Detroit wants to take you. It was like maybe like the 3rd or 4th pick in the 2nd round. They want to take you. He said, however, Portland is calling and they don't have any picks, but they're trying to trade for a pick right now. They really want you. They want you bad. They're seeing you, blah, 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 blah. They're already basically saying they're going to guarantee you a 2-year deal. They got veterans. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get to come in and learn. You ain't got, you know, ain't no pressure. Yeah. You know, it's older guys, this and that, Steve Smith and Detlef and all of these dudes, but mm-hmm. they really want you. They think you can play. What do you want me to do? You want me to tell Detroit? No, Detroit is a little bit different. You know, they're not guaranteeing you anything. It's going to be a lot of young dudes. You know, it's going to be a battle making a team. Your boy was there then. Larry Brown was there. Yeah. He's the coach there. Yeah. He's like, man, this is a hard, you know, this could be a tough deal. You know, they trying to figure it out. And so I said, man, Portland, it's right down the road, blah, blah, blah. I get to play with, you know, I mean, I grew up watching Steve Smith. Like that's the man. So I guarantee him, like, you know, do it. So they ended up trading Atlanta. Well, Atlanta picked me, but they had already done the trade.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, when my name got called, I ain't gonna lie, man, I broke out in tears, man. That was like, I was not a good basketball player when I was young. I didn't really start getting good at basketball until like my sophomore year in high school. When I transferred schools and the coach that was there took a kid that was maybe a little bit athletic, kind of had some length, mm-hmm. but just was a street ball hooper that just loved to play and started teaching me like how to play, how to work out, how to do stuff. And I started getting better then, but even then, nobody was like, oh yeah, he gonna be the guy. It was, you know, it was Mike D, it was Oma, it was those guys. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the UW thing didn't go work out at Boise State. It's Boise State. People started seeing my name because I was like, but it wasn't, the NBA was always like way off. Like, yeah, it was a dream, but it was way off.
Facts.
And so for all of that to happen and have my name called, I'll never forget that moment. It was one of the best, you know, basketball deals that ever happened in my life. It was special, man. Like, it was special. It was special.
No
was
question. Special. No question. Yeah. You spent 11 years as a pro, CBA, France, Italy, Belgium, Spain, Turkey. What did you learn about yourself along that professional basketball journey that you may can teach the next generation of ball players? What did you find out about yourself as a man, as a ball player?
I think the first thing I learned and most important thing I think for me as a person I learned was that I was way too close-minded, a little bit arrogant, and a lot ignorant of what was out there, right? Like, you know how it is, man. We come from, you know, we're prideful people, number one, being our bloodline. But two, being an American, you always think America is the best thing and the only thing. And this is the only way. And I think playing in all of those different countries, being around all the different people, going and playing all these different places, I just started to, you know, figure out and learn that, you know, we all different, but we all the same. And it's just understanding, man. It's like it's understanding and being open to stuff and not just being like, this is the only way you do stuff or this is the right way or whatever it is. It's a whole lot of rights out there. You know, we're trying to find the best way, but it's a whole lot of rights. So I think that was like my biggest thing. I learned so much about myself, like I said, of just, you know, I think I was a little bit closed-minded, right? Like closed-minded and just not open to, you know, what was out there. And I think that helped me to, you know, be able to just kind of just do whatever, man, and live whatever and be grateful for, you know, what I have and who I am and be open. And I think that helped me to learn so much more about not just myself, but everything.
Yeah.
That was one. And I think the second thing that was really big from a basketball standpoint was just, it's all about being available and taking opportunities. Like it just, you know, be at everything, man. Like, don't turn down an opportunity. You never know when something is going to come your way or when something is going to come. And if you ain't there, it ain't going to happen if you ain't there. So just being available and being there, opportunities, and enjoying it. Enjoying the opportunity. You're not just there because you're trying to get something out of it. You're there because you want to enjoy the party. You know, you want to enjoy the people around you. And like, I don't think I would be here on this podcast talking to you if it wasn't, because I think, you know, whatever it was, you and I, whenever we saw each other or competed or talked, you know, we hit it off. It was always cool. It was always love. It was always understanding. It wouldn't be that way now. And I think I have, you know, there's a lot of people like that I've run into in this basketball culture. Obviously it's small, but man, I got love for everybody. And I feel like I hope that people do too, because I think I enjoyed people and people enjoyed me when I was around them.
Man, that's some sound advice, bro, because if, like you say, if you're not there, then you definitely ain't getting the opportunity. I took opportunities, man. People, when they told me to go to Qatar and they tell me go here, I win a championship. I'm in Qatar, right? They tell me it's right next to Dubai. This is 2001. So I leave September 11th just happened, bro. And so everybody looking at me like I was completely out of my mind. They're like, you going to the Middle East? I'm like, yeah,
wow.
Man. But they was offering some solid bread. Yeah. And so I go over there, man. First year, we get to the championship. I end up losing to Johnny Rhodes. Remember Johnny Rhodes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he played for Saudi Arabia. This dude hit a game winner on us, man. So I missed out on my bonus. The second year, we win the championship of Asia. I end up playing against J.R. Henderson and Shamgod in the final. Because Saudi Arabia brought them in the next year. So we ended up smashing.
J.R. was playing in – was he playing in Japan then, or he was still in – he was floating around here?
So he see, that was 01. So I think he might have been sniffing with Vancouver a little bit.
I mean, he was still back and forth a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, and then was like, yo, you know, Saudi Arabia was offering a bag back then. I think they was getting like 50, 60 for like 2 months or something crazy. Yep. So it was a bag. So they just had the bag game. But all that to be said, bro, like so many people. I brought Stace Bozeman out there with me to Qatar to Malaysia. But we had such
that's one right there.
Amazing experience, man. Just lifelong relationships, amazing experiences. And nothing would have happened if I would have told Qatar no. If I would have said, oh, man, I ain't going to the Middle East. But no, that's some sound advice for this next generation. Man, my last question for you, bro. I want to talk about just quickly your current squad, Boise State. You guys are in the Mountain West Conference, pick fourth, I believe, to finish in the conference this year. Just get coach. Give me the outlook on this year's squad, some players to watch for, and just the, you know, talk about your squad.
Man, it's some talent in the building. I'll tell you that much. It's some really, really good talent. We got a good mixture of some veteran talent and some young talent. It is the first thing I'll say, it's an incredible culture around here. These guys, Coach Rice and the staff and the kids here have done a good job of, you know, just nurturing an incredible culture. Like, I love coming to work every day, man. I get here early, I'm here, and then these guys just start coming in. Coach, let's get some work. I mean, it's a different deal when you get to, when you ain't got to, like, you know, beg and plead and poke and prod. Hey, man, go work. They love it. They want to. And so I'm really excited about that. Obviously, coming off the heels of the momentum that they created last year, you know, guys is coming in with some high expectations and really, really, like, really coming in like, man, we need to be better than we were last year. We got to win at least one more game. We win at least one more game. That's going to lead to another one.
Fact.
So we got to do it. We got some new guys, right? Like, we got some new guys. We got a couple of transfers. We got some freshman guys that we're going to expect from big things. So that's going to be the key to our season, is how well can we get these guys, those guys, acclimated to the Bronco way, and how well we can get them acclimated into understanding, learning stuff, and get that chemistry. The sooner and the quicker that we can get that chemistry and get them dudes gelling, I expect big things from this team, man. And I'm like I said, I'm grateful to be a part of it and be in work with these guys. And you know, we had a good little reps this morning. We'll have another little, we'll do a little bit of a rep tonight, this afternoon. So it's good, man. It's a, like I said, it's a really good culture.
Yeah.
Not just even the basketball program, but even the other side, the admin, they behind us. The That's fans awesome. Here are like the best, man. I mean, I it's the reason why I went to Boise State, played for the Stampede so many times. I kept coming back because, you know, the fan base, the community here, they get behind you, and they just, I mean, you know, you feel a push. So it's a great spot, man. It's going to be some big time. It's going to be big time year.
No, definitely. Boise State is on the map in college basketball. The conference you guys play in is high level. It's going to be extremely competitive with Wyoming, San Diego State. And then, you know, you look at the other, these other teams they got that, you know, they're not in the Mountain West. Are they?
Colorado State.
Bruh, Colorado State. Yeah, everybody got better. So, yeah.
Mexico got better. Nevada, Utah State. It's going to be like you said, the conference. I just think people don't understand. Like, you know, people that know who they do, they give, hey, they like, man, the Mountain West is a killer.
Yeah.
But people that don't know, I don't think they realize how high level of a conference this is, man. It's shoot, man. We had four teams, probably should have been five, that got to the tournament last year. So, I mean,
Facts. Well, Berto, man, we appreciate you coming on the show, my brother. We're so glad to see you in college basketball, impacting the next generation of young student athletes for the greater good and for the betterment of their both basketball game and their character and who they are off the floor, man. Thank you again, brother. We appreciate you.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
All right.
I'm gonna send you a Bronco shirt so you can take that duck one off. I'll keep you posted after this weekend.
Hey, if it's free, it's for me. I will.
You gotta do it.
I will have it on the next show, Berto.
Hey, all right,
man. I appreciate you, ladies and gentlemen. Roberto Bergeson.
Appreciate you.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh my! Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.